KXCO 1230 AM, W255DN Wausau, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. President Trump said today there could soon be a deal to end the fighting in Ukraine.
It's time to end this bloodletting and restore peace, and I think we're going to do it.
He was hosting the French president at the White House. At the UN, the U.S. split from European allies by refusing to blame Russia for its invasion and votes on three resolutions. The Office of Personnel Management, which sent the email telling federal workers to report what they'd accomplished over the past week, is now telling federal agency heads they can decide for themselves if their workers should comply. There are prayer services for the Pope at St. Peter's Square. Chris Lipsay has the latest update.
The Vatican says Pope Francis's condition has slightly improved, and the kidney issue discovered over the weekend is not a cause for concern.
The Pope is still in critical condition. CBS News Brief, I'm Cammy McCormick.
I'm Brittany Merlot with WXCO News, your news roundup in a quick podcast form. Find it anytime on the WXCO website at BullFallsRadio.com. For WXCO News, I'm Brittany Merlot. A new bill proposed by Wisconsin Democrats aims to designate certain locations as safe havens. Stuart J. Waddles has more.
According to a Wisconsin Watch report, those would be places where immigration officers would be barred. The legislation introduced by state senators seeks to maintain protections for immigrants in places like schools, healthcare facilities, and places of worship. The move follows the Department of Homeland Security's recent cancellation of Biden-era guidelines that limited immigration enforcement in those areas.
And as the Wausau School District continues the consolidation process of elementary schools, their main goal is still to take care of staff, students, and families first as they focus on logistics. Many decisions are still left to be made before the next school year starts in August, and decisions for staff placements have been a work in progress. While principals were assigned schools by the Education Department, teachers took surveys ranking their potential spots. Now, some teachers already have their assignments, and a high percentage were able to get their primary location. And once all of the teachers are placed, the next step will be talks on how to collaborate and bring the best practices from each building together. And the district continues to work with the Red Granite Charter School to determine a new location. The district and school leadership say they've had beneficial meetings, and that they're coming closer to some decisions. The district and bus company First Student are also continuing to collaborate as the bus company determines routes for the coming school year. And the Wausau School District will be hosting a three-day Bridging the Future community conversation. It'll be on March 6th through the 8th. That's next Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. The event will discuss what has worked well in the district and what can be worked on. Anyone in the community is welcome to attend, but they ask for people to attend all three sessions as each day's conversation will build on the former. I'm Brittany Merlot for WXCO.
The Bucks beat the Heat. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Bucks were down by 10 at the half, but came back strong in the fourth quarter, defeating the Miami Heat 120-113. Giannis and Damian Lillard were limited, but that opened the door for players like Kyle Kuzma and Kevin Porter Jr., known as Kuz and Scoot. Doc Rivers:
I think Scoot scored a couple of times, then Kuz gets a rebound, breaks out, creates a basket, then Scoot goes back to it. Just gives us a lot of speed, and we try to make sure we have one roller, and I think it's a good fit.
The Bucks head to Houston to play the Rockets tomorrow night. College hoops: the Badgers now 21-6 after losing to Oregon in overtime Saturday. They host Washington 8 p.m. tomorrow night at the Kohl Center. Marquette is at home tomorrow night against Providence. The Golden Eagles have lost four of their last six games. And the Milwaukee Panthers losing to Robert Morris 72-59. Robert Morris in first place in the Horizon League. The Panthers dropped to fifth. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly cloudy tonight, maybe a stray sprinkle or shower, and a low in the upper 20s. Partly sunny and staying mild for tomorrow, high in the low 40s. A rain snow chance Tuesday night and Wednesday. Temps will stay much above average through the rest of the week. Currently, it's 44 degrees.
On Thursday night, it's the regular season finale for the Wausau West High School boys basketball team. The Warriors will play host to the Merrill Blue Jays. Hear all the exciting action live on 98.9 WXCO online at WXCO.FM, mobile devices, and Alexa by searching WXCO, and on the Civic Media app, starting with the pregame show at 7 and the opening tip at 7:15. Wausau West High School Boys Basketball on 98.9 WXCO is brought to you by the Cloverbelt Credit Union, Red Robin Restaurants, Sun Printing, the Wausau West Athletic Department, Coast to Coast Marketing. It's the Wausau West Boys Basketball Team hosting Merrill in the final game of the regular season. Thursday night, starting with the pregame show at 7, opening tip at 7:15, on your home for Wausau West Sports, 98.9 WXCO, online at WXCO.FM. Mobile devices and Alexa by searching WXCO and on the Civic Media app.
Pat Kreitlow.
If you are feeling discombobulated lately, have I got the guy for you. Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation Area is filling in for me on Tuesday.
Up North News with Pat Kreitlow. Weekday mornings starting at 6.
You're listening to Bull Falls Radio, WXCO, Wausau's home for the Todd Allball Show.
Broadcasting live from the Civic Media Studios in Green Bay, this is Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, your inside source on everything entertainment from Wisconsin to Hollywood. Whatever gets you through the night, it's all right, it's all right. And now, a guy who believes in an eye for an eye, but only if they're lowercase, Pete Schwabba.
Welcome to Nightlight, ladies and gentlemen. Happy Monday, everybody. Thank God the weekend is over so we can get back at it and talk about the things we love to talk about in our lives. Movies, TV, comedy, theater, sports, all things entertainment here at Nightlight. Finally, we are back on the air after a long, arduous weekend. And it's beautiful today. It's like 50 degrees. Conrad, why aren't you wearing shorts?
That's a good question.
Yeah, come on, man.
I was going to, but then I realized it was going to be colder at night, so I was like, probably shouldn't do it yet.
Colder at night?
Just yet.
Because when I was here last week, there was like 3 feet of snow right next to the cars out here. It's gone after one day. That's so amazing.
You know, it's funny. I went and visited a friend last night, and his driveway was kind of full of snow, so I had a hard time getting over it. He's like, I'm not going to shovel. It's just going to melt tomorrow anyways.
That's how I was. I had a friend come over on Saturday, Nathan Deming, who came over. We had a screening on Saturday of his film February, which he talked about here last week. So I kind of had to shovel the stairs, which was frustrating because we were gone a lot. And so I just didn't even bother. I knew it was going to warm up. But Nathan's coming over. I don't want him to fall and break his coccyx right before his big screening. So I had to shovel a little bit, but that's all right. Yeah, it's beautiful today. And guess how I spent the day knowing it was so beautiful outside?
Inside.
Inside doing absolutely nothing.
There you go.
Except prepping the show. That's how worn out I was from the weekend. It was a fun weekend. We had our Christmas party for Civic Media here in Northeast Wisconsin. And Sage and Aaron came up from Madison. That was fun. And Jacqueline. And we had the whole Northeast Wisconsin crew here down at the Heights. Boy, what a cool place that is, huh?
I never went upstairs. That's awesome up there.
I think I had a burger there once, but the spread they put out was like,
oh yeah, it was really good.
Really good and, you know, pretty healthy, which no argument there, but really fun to see everybody. A great time. That started my weekend. And then on Saturday, I introduced Nathan's film at the Mariner Theater up in Marinette. We probably had about 30 people show up, which isn't too bad. Had a nice Q&A. The film went over really well. And then I got in the car and drove to Stevens Point to see my daughter. Pardon me. Which was phenomenal. They had a show in the theater. It was great. We got to hang out. And this is true sickness at its best. The next day we went out to eat, my wife, my daughter, and I. We're about to head back to Marinette. I decide I need a chocolate shake in the world's worst way.
Okay.
Just to kind of nurse on the way home. It's a 2-hour drive, you know. So we go to Cold Stone, and there was one person working, and there were about 12 people in line in front of us that did not stop me. We were there for 30 minutes. I'm not kidding.
Wow.
It was true, like, just addiction at its best. I needed a chocolate milkshake.
Could have just went to McDonald's and got one of theirs.
No way.
You were determined for the Cold Stone.
I needed some kind of designer milkshake. I'm not going to McDonald's when I have a milkshake a year, right? But my wife... and my daughter are both just standing there rolling their eyes waiting for me. But when you're doing the driving, I can call those kind of shots. I can say, I'm getting a milkshake. And then, of course, they both ended up getting something, too. But, oh, my God, it was a little ridiculous. I don't wait in line for anything. I don't wait in line to get into nightclubs, restaurants. I don't care how good the food is. I've never had food that was good enough for me to take 45 minutes waiting for a table. I just wouldn't do it. Oh, but I waited 30 minutes for a milkshake.
You know, I've had the Cold Stone one in Appleton.
Yeah.
And I agree. It'd be worth it.
It's good stuff.
It's good.
If you're not in a hurry.
Yeah.
Now, if she had said it's going to be 30 minutes, I would have turned around and left. I didn't know that, though. Yeah. I got the family of five kids in front of us, probably all under 5 years old, and the kids are taking their time, making up what they want. I'm like, oh, dear God, please, let's go. You're the mom. Just say vanilla ice cream, five vanilla ice creams, and be done with it. Don't let a kid choose at 3 years old, do you?
That's their biggest decision in their life right
there. I guess it is, yeah.
They want Oreos or M&M's.
Right. Hey, welcome to Nightlight, folks. It's great to have you with us wherever you're joining me from across this great state, this beautiful tropical warm state today. It's good to have you, folks. And you can catch us on, hey, how can people watch the radio, Conrad? We should really square that away.
Yeah. So on Facebook, we're under Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, WGBW or WISS. On YouTube, it's Civic Media or WGBW. And on Twitter or... Just Twitter. WGBW or Civic Media.
Yeah, phone lines are open. Let us know what you're thinking, folks. 855-752-4842. You're welcome to chime in on anything we're talking about. It's just good to have you. Or text us, 855-752-4842. Same number. And text us on the app. If you have the app, it's so easy to use. So I have to say, we got a great show tonight. Mariah Gates will be here. She is a published author. She has a new book that is out tomorrow. It's called... Cinema Her Way, Visionary Female Directors in Their Own Words. Mariah is a film critic for RogerEbert.com. She has a great Substack. She's going to join us at 6:35, talk about her new book. We'll talk a little Oscars, which are now officially less than 1 week away. But I'm excited to have Mariah on the show. She's always a good convo. And then at 7:35, a guy from my hometown named Chad Franker will be here. Chad has a new business he's about to launch. And it's great. And I'm going to just say Chad is hoping to help cure loneliness. So we will do that. I think it's called, he sent us the information and now I've lost it. It was in front of me. Meals with a Friend. Where is this? I am sorry, Chad, but Chad will be here at 7:35 talking about this really cool new idea he has. He's about to launch it. And it's just a way that Chad wants to give back and help people who are lonely by connecting them, doing something that's good for the community, helping people make meaningful connections, and combating loneliness. And what's wrong with that, I ask you? Nothing. So Chad will be here in the studio. Oh, it's called Meal with a Friend. That's it. Chad will be here at 7:35 in studio. He's making the drive down from Marinette like I do every day. And it will be great to have him here talking about his new, very cool business. Boy, I had somehow, don't ask me how I did it, with all my traveling and introducing a movie and going to the Civic Media Party, I still managed to watch Green and Gold, a little film you might have heard of by our pal Andres Lindwall. Went to see it last night with my mom and my wife. Very sweet story. Very, very sentimental. Have you seen it yet?
I have not.
Yeah, I'd be interested to know what you think. I enjoyed it. It is very heartwarming. I will say that. And I kind of knew it wasn't going to be controversial or edgy because I knew that Culver's helped finance it. So I thought it would be sort of more of a heartwarming thing. And it certainly was. Craig T. Nelson is great. Brandon Sklenar is great. He is not in it as much as I thought, though. I will say that the actor who stole the show, in my opinion, was the female lead, Madison Lawler. She was great. And I don't know where they found her, but I was watching the film and I felt like I had seen her in something. But she was really good. And she plays a girl living on a farm, her grandpa's farm, who has a dream. She wants to get out there and sing. And that was a huge component in the movie, really more than the Packers. So I understand why they build it as kind of a Packer movie, because there was certainly that element. But there was a lot more going on in this film too. But we watched that. Love to know what you hear, what you thought of Green and Gold, folks. If you saw it in the theaters, I think that's the only place you could have seen it so far. I do believe it is out on streaming very soon, though. We've had Anders Lindwall on the show. He was a great guest, very hardworking guy, and I applaud him for getting this film made because it's quite an achievement. Filmed in beautiful Door County, and great performances. Craig T. Nelson, Brandon Sklenar, Madison Lawler. It was Emmett Walsh's last film. That's kind of cool. But let me know what you thought of Green and Gold. I would love to hear your thoughts on that. I also saw a film last night called The Gorge. And I'll talk about that after the break. Because right now, young man, we need to get to our question of the night.
Let's talk about the question.
Okay, question.
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 Pregunta.
Question.
Question.
Hey, I have a question.
Questions.
This question.
Domanda.
Question.
Question.
Questions.
It's National Tortilla Chip Day, folks. Everywhere in this great country of ours, amid political turmoil, we celebrate the tortilla chip. Which leads me to our question of the night, which is, what is your favorite chip? I'll be honest, I wish I could go the rest of my life without eating a chip. I don't need them. They're not good for you. They're salty. Most of them have tons of ingredients. Having said that, what are you going to have as a sandwich? Just a pickle? I doubt it.
Some fruit?
Wow, who wants that? what is your favorite chip? That's our question of the night. Let us know. Conrad, you said you liked...
Yes, the Frito-Lay's twist.
Something from the Fritos family.
Yeah. Frito-Lay twist, and it's the honey barbecue.
I've had that. That's a dynamite chip.
It is so good. If I see it, I'm always like, do I get it or do I not? And then,
yeah,
you know. There's not a chip that makes me actually do that besides that.
Okay. I've got three different, it's a three-way race. Organic Doritos with no red dye 40.
Yep. The white cheddar.
White cheddar.
Really good.
It's a good chip. And you know what? In some strange way, I get sick of those quicker than regular Doritos. So I have like 10 of them. I'm fine. Because most chips, I go to town and I can't stop eating them. I polished off several Pringles last night. I do like a good Pringle.
There's so many different flavors of Pringles now. I can't even decide which one I want if I for Pringles.
It's like the Ben and Jerry's of chips.
Yes.
So I would have to say probably, and you know, potato chips, relatively healthy. Typically the fewer ingredients in a chip, the healthier they are. And most potato chips have like potatoes and salt. Same with Fritos. I think it's just like corn and oil and salt. And I like Fritos. But I'm going to have to noodle this for a couple minutes, maybe through the break.
So I tried to make my own tortilla chips once.
Oh, really? How'd that go?
Because I just was like, all right, I had the low-carb tortillas.
Yeah, oh, yeah, okay. A low-carb chip.
Oh, it turned out so bad.
Really? Like and, how? Like soggy or just and tasted bad?
Tasted bad, kind of soggy. And I made the whole batch. I didn't even try it to make sure it was good.
Did you eat them all?
I got through them, but needed a lot of salsa on it.
All right. I'll give mine after the break. I'll give my favorite chip. We'll talk about, there's so much to talk about. Cocaine Bear came out on this day 2 years ago. The SAG Awards happened last night. Reacher, there's a new Reacher season out. And I did kind of like this movie, The Gorge, but we've got Mariah Gates coming up at 6:35. We'll talk about her new book. Send them her way. I can't wait to read it. So we'll do all that. We got a lot to get to. Great to have you with me on this Monday night edition of Nightlight with Peach Wava on the Civic Media Radio Network. She can't do a thing to
me. Bull Falls Radio, WXCO.
Yamato, the drummers of Japan return to the Grand Theater in Wausau with their Power of Human Strength tour. Experience the explosive energy of these talented musicians when they take the stage on Friday, March 7th. With more than 40 different taiko drums, Yamato engulfs the audience in energetic sound. Yamato, tickets at grandtheater.org.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. The North Carolina Supreme Court declined to fast-track a challenge by a GOP Supreme Court candidate who lost in November by 734 votes. And super PACs backed by Elon Musk are pouring millions into Wisconsin's 2025 Supreme Court race. After two recounts, incumbent North Carolina Supreme Court Justice Allison Riggs led by 734 votes, with 5.5 million ballots cast. Her GOP challenger, Judge Jefferson Griffin, claims as many as 65,000 of those voters were ineligible. February 17th, Griffin filed in appeals court, but the state elections board requested a fast track to the state Supreme Court. February 20th, that request was denied, and the case is likely to be heard later this year. The New York Times reported Elon Musk's America PAC is spending $1 million on GOP voter turnout for an April 1st Wisconsin Supreme Court race. Musk's Building America Future PAC has also booked another $1.5 million supporting former GOP State Attorney General Brad Schimmel. His opponent, Judge Susan Crawford, raised over $7.7 million so far with outside spending via donations to the Wisconsin Democratic Party. The 2023 election of Justice Janet Prusiewicz resulted in fairer redistricting maps for the first time in over a decade. Find more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
You're listening to Bull Falls Radio WXCO, Wausau's home for Up North News Radio.
She says, hey, Pete and Conrad, my favorite chip is Ranch Doritos. If I had to wager money on the number one answer tonight, I think I would probably guess people would say Ranch Doritos.
They're dynamite.
You know, they're good. Yeah, there's no question. I think if I had to go with the Dorito that wasn't the organic, you know what? Forget the organic. This is favorite chip. I'm going to go nuts here. I'm going to say Pringles.
Is there a certain...
Just the regular.
The regular.
Old school.
You know.
The OG.
I really like their cheddar sour cream and onion Pringles.
Yeah.
Those are really good.
That I've had those. Those get overwhelming after a while, though. Okay. It's almost like too much of a taste. You know what?
Too much cheddar, too much sour cream.
I think so. Like with the regular Pringles, you can suck those things down, and all of a sudden you're like, is that everything in the canister I just ate? Like, what happened there?
Do you put your whole arm down it to make sure?
I do. It's hard to get out. You know, luckily... Anna says her favorite chip is Ranch Doritos, and I do think that would be number one. But I'm gonna go Taco Doritos. If I had to pick a taco,
yeah.
I think that was the first flavor, even before nacho cheese.
Those are really good.
They are good.
I think it was the first because they always make that retro bag for it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you feel like the bag looks like a Mexican restaurant. It has like cool colors and like. Monica from Mount Horeb, she's also in the 608, says, Miss Vicky's jalapeno potato chips. I've seen those and they look too fancy for me, Monica. I'm not going to lie. The bag is like a designer bag. It's overwhelming.
Those, I mean, you can get those at the sub shops like Jimmy John's or not right. Jimmy John's, but Subway.
Subway, yeah.
They have those Miss Vicky's chips and I've tried the jalapeno one. It is really good.
Okay. As long as we get a voucher. That's a great one. And those are chips I do mean to try because I like a good jalapeno chip. But I haven't tried those yet, Monica. But keep those texts coming. What is your favorite chip? It's International Tortilla Chip Day, folks. We could not let this question fall by the wayside. So, yeah, I saw this movie last night called The Gorge. And it's Miles Teller and Anna Joy Taylor. Is it Anna Taylor-Joy or Anna Joy Taylor? Let's go to the IMDb.
Taylor-Joy.
Taylor-Joy. Okay. Anna Taylor-Joy. They're both charged with manning a watchtower, one on the east side of a gorge, the other on the west side of a gorge. You can barely see the tower. And the contract is for 1 year. They each replace someone who kind of fills them in and says you're basically, there's bad things in the gorge. There's like this mysterious fog over the gorge. And one guy tells Miles Teller, you're guarding the gates of hell. You're not trying to stop people from going into the gorge. You're trying to stop or kill anything that comes out of there. And basically what happens was it was a nuclear meltdown in the 40s. And you have DNA from plants, animals, and humans all kind of meshing together in these crazy, weird creatures. Anyway, the two people in the watchtowers are not even supposed to communicate, but they do, obviously. They fall in love. That part of it kind of drags. But it's a good film. It's a great Netflix movie. Like one of those things you could just watch at home. You don't have to go to the theater. And I feel like, I hate to say this, but when I find a great Netflix movie, I don't expect it to be perfect.
Yeah.
I just expect it to be passable and not buffer. So I really enjoyed it. And I can kind of recommend it because it's a great concept. It looks cool. Miles Teller's great. Anna Taylor-Joy is great. And they figure out a way to get over and see each other so they have contact. They break the rules. Sigourney Weaver plays the head of the whole project. It's like this like mercenary group. Kind of a cool film, but far from perfect.
It sounds like a really cool story to it.
Yeah. I like what they did, like that what the gorge is and what's down there. And there's water. There's an old like chem lab, a missile silo. It's just crazy.
You saw that in the theaters?
No, I saw that last night on Netflix.
Oh,
I
was so gonna, it is Netflix, okay.
Yeah, I was going to watch Nickel Boys. If I want to see the last three Oscar films that are on, then I've seen all 10. And I will, but it's probably going to cost me $60. And that really ticks me off. Yeah. $20 a pop to rent Nickel Boys and I can't remember if it was The Brutalist or I'm Still Here, well, one of them.
They are doing it at Marcus where you can go see the films.
Right.
And I think it's like a $25 package and you can see five films.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I live an hour from the closest Marcus Theater.
Oh, yeah.
I don't have that luxury, but
you could have a really late night after Nightline.
I could do that or I could come down early, which is what I'll probably do. I almost came down early to see I'm Still Here today. That would be a lot cheaper than sitting on my butt and renting it at home. And I have one episode left in White Lotus season two.
Oh,
and I have a feeling this last episode, and that's how they do it on the show. Everything kind of comes to a head, and I'm kind of excited. I'm going to watch that tonight.
We'll have to discuss tomorrow if you enjoyed season one or season two more.
You know what? It's been a couple years. I don't even remember. I remember season one and the characters, and I loved the guy who was on his honeymoon who couldn't let it go that he didn't have the honeymoon, the main honeymoon suite. And like, guy at the front desk is messing with him. I laughed hysterically. I thought, I know it's going to sound, because I used to date her, but Sydney Sweeney was really good.
She was.
She played that really snotty brat. Steve Zahn was great, you know. What did you like better?
I liked season two.
Okay.
There's just so many more twists and turns. You just never know where it's going to go.
Yeah.
And then the finale is just insane.
All right. Now you got me excited. All right, so I'll watch that later. We'll discuss that tomorrow, White Lotus Season 2. Let us know if you see, what did you think of White Lotus Season 2, folks? Chime in if you like. I'll give Green and Gold a thumbs up. It was a nice movie for the area. It was heartwarming. It was beautifully shot. Great cast. I will say Craig Nelson was not particularly likable, but it worked within the story because it made his granddaughter even more likable, but you'll have to see that.
It kind of... From what I saw, it looked like in the trailer that he was going to be a grumpy old farmer.
And he is.
Yeah.
That's exactly what he is. And the only thing I would say, it would be better if, like, because the Packers are such a prominent subplot and betting the farm on the Packers going all the way, it would be nice if they could get more NFL Films footage because they faked it really well. They did a great job. But the NFL does not mess around. They're very tough to deal with. And I know that from experience. They can be very stingy. But nice film. Check out Green and Gold. Check out The Gorge. We're going to check out one of our friends. Mariah Gates is joining me next to talk about her new book, Cinema Her Way, Visionary Female Directors in Their Own Words. And then we'll talk some Oscars, too, with our friend Mariah Gates. That's coming up next. Text us. What's your favorite chip, folks? It's International Chip Day. It's the least you could do. 855-752-4842. We're coming right back after Civic Media's award-winning news team keeps you informed. This is Nightlight with Peach Wabba on the Civic Media Radio Network. On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabe. More odd yet not surprising news from the Kanye West camp. The New York Post reports that those close to Kanye say he is inhaling nitrous oxide, or laughing gas. Love that stuff. The Post reports that the drug was a major issue between West and recently estranged wife Bianca Censori. According to the Post, West reps are blaming his dentist, Thomas Connolly, for getting him hooked on nitrous again because it messes up his memory, adding that Connolly wants to steal millions of dollars from the rapper. How much cash does Kanye carry on him when he goes to the dentist? Yeah, I'm talking to you. One of the most famous scenes from the film Taxi Driver was Robert De Niro's character, Travis Bickle, asking that very question. De Niro recently appeared on Live with Mark and Kelly and said the whole scene was improvised. Bobby D was nominated for an Oscar for the role. Plans for a sequel to Taxi Driver were ultimately scrapped in 2013 because Martin Scorsese was unhappy with the script. Apparently, there were not enough ad-libs in the world to save it. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabe, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Wausau West High School hockey team is just two wins away from a trip to the state tournament. On Tuesday, the
Todd Allbutt.
It's a little overwhelming. You got to be in the right mindset.
You also cannot have any, no chapped lips, no cut,
no
anywhere.
Cracks. Yeah.
Otherwise, it's going to hurt.
That is an assault on your taste buds. It's the salt and vinegar. You have to be as serious as that's like smoking non filtered cigarettes. Love them both. Hey, this is exciting. I'm very happy to welcome my next guest. She's been on the show before a few times, and I just love talking to her about movies. She is a film critic and writes for RogerEbert.com, as well as her own Substack, which I encourage you to follow. But recently, I think she's publishing, I think this is her second book. It hits shelves tomorrow. Do we still have books? I don't know, but you can get her work. It's available tomorrow. Cinema Her Way, Visionary Female Directors in Their Own Words. She's here to talk about it with us right now on Nightlight, Mariah Gates. Hi, Mariah.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good. I also love salt and vinegar potato chips, and it was very dangerous during road trips as a child because I would open the bag and my whole family would be like, no, roll down the windows. So
some people can handle that. Some people can't. It's like the ghost pepper of chips, I think. It is pretty pretty intense, but I appreciate you sharing that. Are you like me? Like, I wish I didn't even, if I could scratch a food that I never craved again, it would probably be chips because there's like zero nutritional value and just
no.
Calories.
There's nothing good about eating chips, but I do love them. It's probably the most dangerous, especially corn chips, like, you know, chips and salsa at a restaurant. I always eat that, and then I can't eat my meal.
Your meal comes, you're already like 4,000 calories in, and yeah, tons of sodium. It's ridiculous. Do you have, as a writer, you know, so, when I
used to drink, I would have a glass of whiskey when I sat down to write a script. Some people smoke cigars or cigarettes. Do you have something you do when you write, like whether it's eat chips or smoke or drink, or what do you do?
I usually drink water. Sometimes if it's the afternoon, I'll drink tea. I love drinking tea. Oh, yeah. I actually have spilt tea on a lot of books. But the main thing I do when I really want to get plugged in to write something is I have to find the right playlist, like whatever the vibe I'm feeling. Yeah. And sometimes it takes a bit to, like today I was working on a piece and the playlist I had chosen was wrong. And I was like, this is wrong. And I had to like took me out of it. I had to restart, find a new playlist. But once you hit the right, I don't know if I necessarily write to the rhythm of the music, but I definitely like get into sort of a fugue state.
Okay.
When the rhythm of the music is aligned with whatever my brain is feeling, that makes sense.
It absolutely makes sense. That makes total sense. Yeah. I will say I used to write, same deal. I'd have a playlist and then I found that I got excited about the songs and I'm like, I'll never be able to afford these in the script. So I kind of, and I would get caught up in the music instead of my story. So I switched to jazz, which is great because it's kind of hard to follow. And it was just, I found it was just a great mood enhancer for whatever I was writing. But it took me like 15 years to find that. hey, it's great to have you here. Thank you for your time tonight. How have you been?
Cold.
Yeah, same.
This winter has been brutal.
Absolutely. Do you have, all right, so this is exciting. You've written other books, correct?
I've contributed to other books. This is my first completely me. Everything is my work. It's interviews, though. So half of what you're reading is the words of the women I interviewed, and half of it is either my contextualization or questions. But it's the first book that is wholly, like, I don't know, come out of my head like Athena. it's been really difficult.
Well, congratulations. That's so exciting. The book is called Cinema Her Way, Visionary Female Directors in Their Own Words. Tell us like how you concepted this. Like you write about film all the time. You're a great writer when it comes to movies. This seems like a natural book to write, but to hone in on women directors and to track them down, it seems like an overwhelming amount of work.
Yeah. Well, my specialty really is female directors, and it stems from several years worth of, well, it started in 2013 when I saw two documentaries that just really made me rethink the entire film canon and all of the women that I didn't even know about. The films were not about female directors. They were about women in history and women in the arts and how they're excluded from canons. And that made me start thinking about film canons. And then the next year there were all these lists of like the best films ever. And there would be like one film directed by a woman. And I'm like, well, I know there's more than one out of every 100 films better. Right. Like this is wrong. And then I started seeing like there was a little bit of a movement of like, here's 10 women you should know. And it was always the same 10 women. And I'm like, well, I know there are more than 10 female directors. None of this is working out. And so all of that kind of started me writing every week. I wrote about a woman director. That was 2014. And then in 2015, as sort of a bit of a social experiment / protest, I only watched films directed by women for the entire year, whether it was in theaters, a rewatch, older films, partly to discover the women that I hadn't seen, partly to support the women who are currently making films, and partly to show that you could do that. And I did not run out of films. I didn't even come close to running out of films. And at the time I lived in LA, so there were some weeks where I could have gone to a different theater every night and seen a film directed by a woman, whether it was a rep theater or a new film. And so after the end of that year, I had been hoping to take, you know, my knowledge and put it into book form. And I spent years sort of dabbling on different ideas, mostly not being able to have the time because I was working. At first I was working at Turner Classic Movies and then I was working at Netflix and I was just doing too much work for other people, you know,
right.
with an emphasis on films directed by women. I got a lot of films by women on Filmstruck. I marketed a lot of films directed by women when I was at Netflix. But then I quit. I quit the corporate wheel and just sort of became a full-time writer. And around that same time, an agent reached out to me and said, do you have a book idea? And I was like, I have a half-finished proposal.
Oh,
what
nice.
Do you think? And originally the idea was to do small profiles of 365 different women. So like you could flip through it, like a page a day calendar kind of thing, but in book form. nobody thought that was sellable, which is probably fair. But Rizzoli was interested in putting out a book about women directors. And they found out that I had this interview column that I do for RodRebert.com, where I interview a woman every month. And they were like, why don't we combine those two and do interviews? And then that way, it's the thing that you're already kind of known for and a strength of yours, and you're still highlighting a variety of women. And so that's really the genesis of the book. But in the back of the book, there is an appendix with another 360, I think, eight names. It's supposed to be 365, but I kept adding more women that I wanted to highlight. So if you did want to do the experiment of a film a day by a different female director, I have given you some names.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
So, all right. So you're obviously, this is what you do. You're a film historian and a critic, and you know a lot more about films than most of us. What did you learn that you didn't already know? I imagine.
I love that question.
Yeah.
I mean, partly I learned a lot about each individual filmmaker's process, which was really the goal. I wanted to allow them a space to talk about process, because I have found in the past that women directors are often not asked about their process. They're mostly asked, what's it like to be a woman? And like, you know, that's boring. You're talking to an artist, talk to them about their art, you know? So that was part of it. But the other thing that I found really fascinating and a little sad was I spoke to women who'd been working over five decades. And I talked to someone who started out in the 70s, and they talked about how hard it was to be listened to and to get their projects off the ground and to be taken seriously. And then I talked to someone who started making films 10 years ago, and they told me almost the same story. And these women didn't know they were talking about the same things. And I didn't ask them to tell me this. This is what they shared. This was their story working in the industry. And it was a bit depressing to hear, you know, someone 50 years apart, and women are still having kind of some of the same hurdles. But then there were also several women who started working later that I talked to, you know, like women who started making films in the 90s and 2000s, who were inspired by some of the women that I spoke to who were making films in the 70s and 80s. And so it was nice to see also the way these like earlier pioneers really did influence these other women. And so there's this big conversation. In fact, the cover of the book is a Karin Kusama film, and the back of the book is a Martha Coolidge film. And part of the reason those are the two images is Karin Kusama saw Martha Coolidge's Valley Girl in theaters as a teenager, and that's how she knew she wanted to become a filmmaker, and she knew she could become a filmmaker. And so what I really loved was seeing not just the sort of sad commonalities, but the happy commonalities and the influence that these women had on each other, whether they knew it or not.
My guest is Mariah Gates. She writes for RogerEbert.com. She writes for herself. Check out her Substack. And she has a new book available tomorrow called Cinema Her Way, Visionary Female Directors in Their Own Words. Mariah, just keeping the subject about women for the time being, what, as opposed to female directors, do you find there are a lot of women writing about cinema, or more than there used to be 20 years ago, maybe, or 40 years ago?
Yeah, I definitely think there is. I think there's a lot more outlets for women to write, and obviously a lot more self-publishing that's available. I think Rotten Tomatoes in particular has found a way to amplify more women who write about film or who use TikTok or YouTube or what have you. I actually used to do the social media at Rotten Tomatoes, and long before they were called out by Meryl Streep for not having enough women on the tomato meter, I actually audited their critics database, and I was like, I think you have a problem. And
really?
Then like a year later, Meryl Streep was like, you guys have a problem, and now it was a public problem. But sometimes that's what it takes, you know, to get, I don't want to say that it was not my boss's fault. I want to make that very clear. It was the people who owned Rotten Tomatoes at the time who did not want to address the issue. Actually, my boss at the time was the person who first hired me to interview women, because he had taken over a different outlet and was like, I want to continue helping you, you know, amplify these voices. So he's an amazing person.
Nice.
And, but you know, I think the main thing really is like, there are a lot of gatekeepers, and there are a lot of specific hurdles, and most of the time it's not on, like, I don't think the people know they're doing it, they're just not noticing they're doing it. It's a lot of internal bias that's, you know, the problem with most things.
Systemic,
are subconscious.
So you do the social media for Rotten Tomatoes currently, or you used
I did 2015 when I did A Year with Women. That's when I worked there.
Do you think, this is off topic, but I have noticed, I feel like films get better reviews now than they used to.
Oh,
I don't
absolutely.
Know if it's critics are scared to.
No, I think a lot of that has to do with people being afraid to lose access.
Yeah.
And which is another systemic issue. I think there is retaliation done by some of the studios where if you trash their previous film, they won't invite you to the next screening, yeah. things like that. So people tend to do like milder criticism or like mixed positive a lot more than they used to, which is unfortunate.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. So, all right. So you are a very well, like people read you. You've got a lot of eyes in your work to begin with. Now you have this book. What do you enjoy writing more? Like, how rewarding was writing this book compared to the writing you do on a daily basis?
It was so rewarding because my favorite thing to do is interviews. I really do love finding out why people do what they do. I love sort of going deeper. And you can do that if you're a think piece writer or doing analysis. But I love hearing what the filmmaker intended, whether that's what came across or not, who knows, but I love to hear what a filmmaker intended. I love to hear the like nitty gritty. Like I went to film production school, so I know how hard it is to make like a 2-minute short, let alone, you know, a 3-hour epic or whatever. So I love to hear those stories of how they got it together. Or in the book, there's a few different casting stories that are fascinating where, you know, like one thing is what they wanted, but then they got someone else and then it turned out that was the right person. And some of that magic I think is really interesting.
That's so cool. All right. When we come back, I'm going to ask Mariah if she thinks more women are finding directing opportunities now. I know the numbers. I'm sure she knows the numbers, but you might be surprised at the numbers. We'll have more in just a couple minutes with writer and author of the new book, Cinema Her Way, Visionary Female Directors in Their Own Words, Mariah Gates. This is Nightlight with Peach Wabba on the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is Bull Falls Radio.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. The North Carolina Supreme Court declined to fast-track a challenge by a GOP Supreme Court candidate who lost in November by 734 votes. And super PACs backed by Elon Musk are pouring millions into Wisconsin's 2025 Supreme Court race. After two recounts, incumbent North Carolina Supreme Court Justice Allison Riggs led by 734 votes with 5.5 million ballots cast. Her GOP challenger, Judge Jefferson Griffin, claims as many as 65,000 of those voters were ineligible. February 17th, Griffin filed in appeals court, but the state elections board requested a fast track to the state Supreme Court. February 20th, that request was denied, and the case is likely to be heard later this year. The New York Times reported Elon Musk's America PAC is spending $1 million on GOP voter turnout for an April 1st Wisconsin Supreme Court race. Musk's Building America Future PAC has also booked another $1.5 million supporting former GOP State Attorney General Brad Schimmel. His opponent, Judge Susan Crawford, raised over $7.7 million so far with outside spending via donations to the Wisconsin Democratic Party. The 2023 election of Justice Janet Prusiewicz resulted in fairer redistricting maps for the first time in over a decade. Find more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Finding the special health care resources families need just got easier. Wisconsin Wayfinder, Children's Resource Network, helps kids with delays, disabilities, special health care needs, and mental health conditions. Call toll-free 877-947-2929. Ask questions. Get answers. Connect today toll free 877-947-2929.
sponsored by the Wisconsin Department of Health Services.
You're listening to Bull Falls Radio, WXCO, home of the Chad Holmes Show.
Hey, this is John Legend, and you're listening to Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Gonna be some sweet sounds coming down.
From the 608, Kenneth, he's in Stoughton, says, Green and Gold was okay. With a farm background, it was inconsistent. Using horses but trying to sell a modern tractor did portray a stubborn Wisconsin farmer quite well. Well said, Kenneth. Thank you for the text. And then Laura Enright, a recent guest on the show, who's also a Chicago-based author, says, this is interesting. My discussion here with Mariah Gates about her new book, Cinema Her Way, Visionary Female Directors in Their Own Words. Mariah, so the book is available tomorrow. People can get it, I assume, on Amazon. Where else? Yep. Is there a mom and pop place you prefer people go?
I love bookshop.org. If you're going to order online, they help support. You can type in your local bookstore and they'll work with them.
Oh, nice.
It should be in most local bookstores. Hopefully. I definitely would encourage getting it at a bookstore if you can.
Okay.
There will be signed copies eventually in MZS Press, which is Matt Zoller Zeitz's online bookstore, the writer. Those are not in stock yet, but they will be. So if you'd like a signed copy, refresh his online bookstore and they'll be there soon.
That's so exciting. Well, I wish you luck with the book. Let's talk about this for a second. I think people assume that Hollywood, you know, they think it's this progressive, liberal place where, you know, everybody has a voice. But I was surprised a few months ago when I read what the percentage of women who direct big Hollywood films are. I think last year, out of the 250 films made at the studio level or the top 250, women directed something like 14 or 15%. And that was up, I think, from the year before. So I was like, oh, it's getting better. But the year before was down from the previous year. So what is going on? Do you see that getting better?
Yeah, the issue there, it's sort of multiple prongs. The data comes from, I'm sure you got this data from the celluloid ceiling, and it's this amazing survey that has been done out of the San Diego State, this research for I think 27 years. And it is for the top 250 grossing films, which to put that in context, I think the 250 usually makes about $500,000. So it's actually not a huge amount. There's, your film doesn't actually have to make that much to make the top 250. What it shows is a handful of things. One, the study doesn't actually take into account streaming, and a lot more streamers hire women. So the data is a little bit flawed.
Okay.
The studios are not hiring like they should. And if you were alive in the 80s or 90s, you might think there were a lot then, and you would be not wrong. There were a lot more in the 80s and 90s because of a group of women known as the Original Six who sued the entertainment industry. Their suit was thrown out because it was supposed to be a class action lawsuit, and some judge decided that Hollywood was not a class. However, there was so much pressure that the big studios, Warner Brothers, Sony, what have you, started hiring a lot more women. And so you saw, Penny Marshall made a bunch of studio films, Nora Ephron, Penelope Spheeris, a bunch of women. Then basically it fell out of the news. And so in the 2000s, you saw a dip again. What we're seeing now is that dip has remained, but a lot of women are being hired by streamers. A lot of women are being hired by television. Like they'll make their small independent film, and then instead of going to the studios, like a lot of men get that offer, they make the jump. The women tend to make a jump into working in television, and in fact, streaming television. Okay. So it's not great, but it's not as dire as the study shows, partly because they don't take into account streaming. And I think they don't take into account streaming because the data is really based on box office, and the streamers, as you know, or probably know, don't say how many people stream. They'll release data, sometimes they won't. Same with the television. So it's hard to get an accurate picture because the streamers withhold data in terms of streaming. So you don't know who are doing the highest grossing. Like highest grossing is kind of a hard metric now. But on my newsletter, I write about 2 to 3 usually new releases directed by women every week. Nice. So the fact is, minimum, there are 2 to 3 films directed by women being released in theaters, online, VOD, what have you, every week. And I think the problem with the study is it tends to scare people and make people think there aren't women. And the whole kind of point of my book is that there are so many women. Like, even whittling the back appendix to 368 women is limiting. There, I could put thousands in there who are currently making films. Wow. I think the main takeaway is we can't force Warner Brothers to hire women. We can't force Marvel to hire women. But what we can do is support the women who are making films and make those numbers go higher, because the higher the box office is, even if it's just a couple hundred thousand, that's better than, you know, not making any money at the box office. Critics can review more films by women. They tend to struggle to get some films directed by women struggle to even get 5. You have to have 5 to get a Rotten Tomatoes rating. I reviewed a film a couple of weeks ago where I was the 40th review. So it is now going to be certified fresh, but an independent film needs 40 reviews. And so I think it's important to have that data and to see that the studios are not doing a good job. But it's also, I think, more important for probably the people listening here to just support the women who are making films, to find out how they can put their money towards the projects that are being made. Because I think it's more important to focus on what is happening than things we can't change. I mean, that's what I've spent the last, I think, 10 years doing is supporting all of these women. And there's, I think, a lot more women who get to make their first film than ever before. And the struggle is always that second, that third, that fourth film. And I think the more we support that first film, it doesn't matter if you haven't heard of them before. Is it playing at a festival? Is it on Tubi? It doesn't matter. Watch it. And the more views, the more you log it on Letterboxd, the chances are that filmmaker will have some metric to show the next producer, and they'll get to make their second
film. Great.
And I think
we have to do a quick news thing. Can I keep you for a few minutes and do a little Oscar talk? Maybe some Catherine Bigelow talk? All right, fantastic. Mariah Gates is going to stick around. We'll talk more with her. Chad Franker's here in the second hour, too. Don't go away. It's Peach Wobbin Nightlight on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Bull Falls Radio, WXCO. Dom Selvia.
Next time, we go overtime with Maggie Dawn, and Harvey K has a toast to Thomas Paine. Plus, how are federal layoffs impacting the great state of Wisconsin? Tune in.
The Dom Selvia Show, weekdays 4 till 6. The Todd Alba Show.
Trevi Olson joins us.
There's a hockey game tomorrow night between Canada and the U.S. Everywhere up in Canada when they were playing the game, the U.S. was being booed. Imagine how you would feel if your neighbor were constantly saying, "I'm taking your backyard." You would find that very serious. That's what's happening around the world. We are going to have no friends, period.
That
matters.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2, on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app. You're listening to Bull Falls Radio.
WXCO 1230 AM, W255DN Wausau.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
It's time for Newman Catholic High School Sports on 98.9 WXCO, online at WXCO.fm. Mobile devices and Alexa by searching WXCO and on the Civic Media app. Newman Catholic High School Sports is brought to you by Red Robin Restaurant, Sun Printing, the Cloverbelt Credit Union. It's time now for Fighting Cardinal Sports on your home for Newman Catholic Athletics, 98.9 WXCO.
And good evening, everyone, and welcome to Newman Catholic High School Boys Basketball on 98.9 WXCO, online at WXCO.fm, mobile devices and Alexa by searching WXCO, and on the Civic Media app. Tonight, it is the